Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on contracts when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression, of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. You know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from a Supreme Court Justice, William O. Douglas. Now, our princes and politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, and that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process. It doesn't come from our politicians. It doesn't come from our lawyers, nor does it come from our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me articulate that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either." Because the real power in America, the real power in Anglo-Saxon administration, is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, then call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, it's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about contracts. Last time I mentioned to you that contracts are very poorly understood. They're not taught in our grade schools, not taught in our high schools. Contracts are not taught in our graduate college or postgraduate schools either. The only place that you're very likely to learn anything about contracts from would be in law school, and even that is limited. Not even the lawyers are permitted to know the full story behind contracts. And yet contracts are so all-pervasive. They regulate and govern everything that we do. There isn't anything from credit cards to mortgages, power company payments, or the telephone bill, including an oath that you take as a witness to testify in court, aren't subject to the laws that govern contracts. So I pointed out to you that a contract is regulated or created by, or the definition of, or here's what a contract is. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. So if what you're doing, the activity that you're getting involved in, is based upon some offer that somebody's making to you. So some guy calls you on the telephone and he says, "I'm from the ABC Siding Company and we have this special offer." Okay, then grab your behiney, because here comes the offer. All right, now, what we need from you is an acceptance of the offer. Are you going to accept this offer? Or are you going to slam the receiver down in his ear? That's what I do. I slam the receiver down in his ear. Cut him off. I don't give him an acceptance. Then, of course, when he sends you this conditional sales contract, it's going to have a time frame and some consideration. You know, how much money do you want, or what do you want from me? What do I have to do to get in on this special free offer? Oftentimes, people will offer you a free offer. We do that here on the law school. We offer you this free CD package. That's a contract. Did you know that? That's my offer. And the acceptance is when you call me on the telephone and you say, Mr. Gordon, I'd like to have that free CD offer. There's the offer. There's the acceptance. Okay, here's the time frame. You give me your name and address. Here's your consideration. Now, you give me your name and address and your phone number so I can send this to you. And I will send that to you without any money. You don't have to send me any money. But the consideration is your acceptance and your name and address. There's the contract. Sometimes people say, well, I'm not going to give you my telephone number. Well, okay. I don't care. I don't need it to send you the CDs. But then I won't call you. And then sometimes people will call and they'll say, how come you didn't send me your CDs? Well, because I'm slow and I'm old. And then if you'd have given me your telephone number, I would have called you and told you I'm not sending them to you this week because I'm old and slow. Anyway, that's the gist of a contract. Something as simple, you know, as just your name and address is a contract. A contest is a contract. You're going to McDonald's and they offer you this contest, you know, fill this out and join this contest. That's a contract. It's got terms and conditions. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. You know, I've got about 30 of them here. Listen to this. There are adhesion contracts, credit cards, driver's license, social security, birth certificates, the Ten Commandments, citizenship, the Masonic Lodge. Standard contracts have four elements. The Communist Manifesto is a contract. Law is a contract derived from citizenship. The telephone, power company, mortgages, and insurance are all contracts. Licenses are contracts. The income tax is a contract. The Constitution is a contract. Labor and union membership, municipal ordinances, the United States Code, and corporate charters are all contracts. Trust indentures, marriage licenses, divorce, contracts are pervasive and little understood. You know, even something as simple as draft registration. You go down to the post office and register for the draft when you get to be 18 because, you know, you thought you had to do that because it's the law, which I don't deny. I'm not here to tell you not to go register for the draft now. But there's a little something about draft registration and the contractual baggage that goes along with it that maybe you ought to know. What do you think? Let's take on one of these subjects over here this time, and let's take a look at draft registration and what it is. And you can decide, well, do you want to sign that contract or not? First of all, let us go back in time. A contract is something that you do voluntarily. All contracts are voluntary. And that's because all contracts require your signature or your acceptance. Now, let's start off with a very basic premise. And that is, all contracts are oral. Now, for you lawyers out there, you know, jumping up and down now in your seat and your adrenaline's flowing and wait, no. Hang on here a second. Wait a second. Let me say that again so that we don't stutter, stammer. Watch my lips. All contracts are oral. If a contract is reduced to writing, the writing becomes the highest and best evidence of the contract. So a piece of paper that contains, in writing, signatures, seals, stamps, terms, conditions, paragraphs, lines, is in fact the highest and best evidence of the contract. We don't need the piece of paper to establish a contract. contracts are oral, and they can be enforced as oral contracts. The problem with oral contracts is he said, she said. But if we had an agreement in a room with five people, the five people are witnesses who can all testify to the terms and conditions of the contract. Now, another problem that we have with oral contracts is that over time we forget the terms and conditions. You know, you come over to my place and you say, hey, Gordon, I'm going to mow your hay and I'm going to take half the crop and I'm going to be over on June 10th and I'm going to put them in big round bales and I'm going to have minimum 800 pound bales and so on. Now, there are several terms of the and stipulations in the contract. 800 pound bales, June the 14th, you know, dates and so on. Now, we actually carried this out. Now, I thought you were coming on June 24th, but you said June 14th. You said 800 pounds. I thought you meant 1800 pound bales and 8 to 1800. You know, there's misunderstandings that occur with oral contracts. And so it's just good policy to reduce it to writing, so that we've got the numerals 800 on the piece of paper, that we've got your signature and my signature on the piece of paper. You get a copy, I get a copy. Then later on, you know, when these bales turn out to be 1,800 pounds instead of 800, or you say, well, I want 60% of the crop instead of 50% and so on, or I want 60% of the bales instead of 50. Then I come back and say, that's not what we agreed to. And you say, yes, it is. And I say, well, let's whip out the contract. That's why we think that contracts are pieces of paper, because insurance contracts are reduced to writing. They're on paper. And the telephone contract, it's on paper, you see. And so it is true that most contracts are written down. I don't deny that. But that does not mean that if it isn't in writing, you don't have a contract. So we start off with the premise that all contracts are oral, and then we can reduce it to writing if we so desire, but it is not necessary. All right, so now with that out of the way, let's go back to the very first Anglo-Saxon contract that we can identify in written history, and that is the Ten Commandments. And here's a guy by the name of God. He goes up on top of the mountain, and he talks real loud, and the ground is shaking, and not that he's violent necessarily, but that, you know, he was demonstrating that he had a little power and authority here. And so the ground was shaking and he was speaking with a loud voice and he said, thou shalt not steal. Okay. So he articulated these Ten Commandments from on top of the mountain, and the people heard his voice. They all spoke the same language. They heard him. This is an oral contract. And the people said in Exodus 24, verse 8, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. And so there was an offer. There was an acceptance. The time frame was forever, and the consideration was the 33 articulable benefits that you receive for the practice of these 759 statutes. And this whole thing is written down, articulated in writing in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, verse 8. So if you wanted to know where the terms and conditions of the contract are, there it is. Live and direct. So there's a contract. Now, this contract is also adhesion. Adhesion, spelled A-D-H-E-S-I-O-N, adhesion contract. It attaches to the heirs and assigns forever. People who weren't there are bound to this contract. I wasn't there. This occurred in 1329 B.C. I wasn't there. I didn't agree to this. I did not say, all that the Eternal hath said, I will do and be obedient, and sign the contract, little Georgie Gordon. I didn't do that. But lo and behold, I grow up to be a big boy and find out that the Ten Commandments have attached to me by adhesion because my great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy bound me to that contract. How in the hell did he do that? How can you and I be bound to contracts, terms and conditions of specific performance that we don't even know about? Maybe can't even spell. It's done by adhesion contract. Is that legal? You bet. It's done every day. It's been around for 3,000 years. And you can sit there and say, well, I don't like that. Too bad. That's like saying, well, I don't want to be a girl. Well, for all you women out there, too bad. Of course, you know, there's somebody going to come along and offer you a sex change operation here. If you don't like being female, you know you can change that. If you don't like being male, you can change that. Unfortunately, you cannot change your adhesion contract under the Ten Commandments. Because the author of it, he won't participate in that. And he's already told you that. So, I'm just a reporter. Now, don't get mad at me. I'm just telling you that that's the way things go. Now, let's suppose we take this up a little bit in more modern times. Let's take the Constitution of the United States, or the Bill of Rights, or the Declaration of Independence. Now, in this country, we're taught that these are good documents and that we love them and they're a part and parcel with our history and our culture. And so we accept those. We've never read them. We've never analyzed or understood them. But we all believe in them. You know, it's like being a Christian. We all believe in our creeds and our doctrines and our church. We don't really know what our church teaches or what its doctrines are, and we've never really read the catechism, but, you know, we believe it because that's what we're taught to believe. Now, when we get to be big boys and girls, and sometimes we start looking into things to find out, I actually read our Constitution. You know, I sat down, I read the whole thing. You can probably do that in an hour, you know. If you're handicapped like I am, you know, you only read 235 words a minute, maybe take you 2 hours, but you know, it doesn't take forever. And you read your Constitution, you find out there are certain terms and conditions, and there are certain specific performances that you and I as citizens are bound to, that we have to specifically perform to. So when we talk about military service, did you know that that's a part and parcel with citizenship in the United States of America? Serving in the military is a part and parcel of your duty of reciprocity for the citizenship that you receive here. Some countries have what they call universal military service, like Russia and Israel. Sometimes they go so far as to make the girls serve in the army as well as the boys. We don't here in America, but then we're kind of odd ducks over here, practicing Anglo-Saxon administration the way we do, and the Ten Commandments, and being real religious people, and kind of mixing them and matching them, you know. We get some kind of strange customs over here, but I just wanted to point out that this is a contract. It's a contract. A little different form of contract, a little bit different than the power company contract, or the telephone contract, or the mortgage, or your insurance policy, but it's a contract nevertheless, because it's an offer over time, with consideration, that requires your acceptance. Now, the acceptance can be verbal. It can be, I do. I mean, see, you could be a young woman going up to the altar, and some guy says to you, do you take this man, Joe Baloney, to be your lawful wedded husband? And you say, I do. Okay, that's the acceptance of a contract. Marriage is a contract. And so he asks the young man, he says, now do you take this woman, Jill Ramsey, to be your lawful wedded wife? And he says, I do. See, that's oral. Contracts are oral. We can reduce it to writing. We can write those words out on a piece of paper and have Jill and Bob sign the piece of paper. We can record a license with the county recorder. We can have the preacher endorse the license on the back and then record it. But the purpose for this recorded marriage license signed by the preacher is to identify the agreement of the parties to this contract. Actually, a marriage license creates a three-party limited general partnership, which in reality is a legal entity. Did you know that you have a legal entity in your marriage with the state? Now, this is prohibited in the Ten Commandments because the first commandment says, you shall have no other gods before me. And so making this contract with a civil law state is an act of idolatry. But, you know, what's a little idolatry when nobody practices the Ten Commandments anyway and everybody is taught and trained to practice the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto? But that's why I said the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto of and by themselves are a contract. It's an oral contract that you agree to. And you know, sometimes you don't even have to be asked the question, do you agree to obey the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto? Yes, I do. We don't need that. We don't need that. We have a doctrine of law here in Anglo-Saxon administration. If you act in a corporate capacity, we will treat you like a corporation. Shucks, all you lawyers out there learned that in law school. We know that coming right out of the chute. So anytime that you act in a corporate capacity, well, then if there's a law that regulates corporations, we'll treat you, the individual, like we treat the corporation. And we find that in Hale versus Hinkle, you know, cited at 201 U.S. 43 on page 75. Neat little statement over there concerning the American Tobacco Company and their claim as a corporation that they had rights. And the court came back and said, no, you've got a franchise. You've got some privileges over here, regulated and controlled by the state, but you don't have any rights that haven't been granted by the legislature. Now, individuals do. We individuals, we have rights above and beyond the rights, privileges, and immunities granted by the legislature to a corporation. But the minute you enter into a contract, a corporate contract, you bring yourself under that corporate contract, and all of a sudden you find, oops, we don't have as many rights as we thought we had. So, how many rights do you have? I had a judge ask me that one time. He was chastising me. So what he was doing, I was in his courtroom there demanding all of my rights at all times and waiving none of my rights at any time. And a little later, we were back in chambers, and he said, Mr. Gordon, how many rights do you have? And I paused for a long time. How many rights do you have? He asked me. Well, come on, Gordon. Is it 5, 10, 25, 50, 75, 110? How many rights do you have? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, that's one of the best answers that I've heard come out of your lips so far today. You know, you come in here spouting off about rights, and then when I ask you how many rights have you got, you say, I don't know. Well, if you don't know how many rights you have, then how do you know that these things that you're claiming as being rights here in the courtroom are in fact rights rather than privileges or immunities? To which I then responded, well, I don't know, Judge. So he said, well, the truth of the matter is you have about 1,100 rights. And I was amazed. I said, 1,100? He said, yeah, about. We don't know exactly how many rights you have, but you could have as many as about 1,100. So for all of you law school students out there, been to law school, didn't know how many rights there were, this judge told me is about 1,100. Well, he said, now how many of those 1,100 rights are available to you, Mr. Gordon? I said, well, I don't know. And he said, well, I do. And the judge explained it to me very succinctly. He said, you do not have any more rights available to you than you can claim. Now, did you get that, boys and girls? There are about 1,100 rights out there that you have available to you, but you can't have any of those rights that you can't claim. So any right that you're going to claim, you have to be able to articulate. You have to know what that right is. You have to be able to stand up in court and articulate it to the judge and claim it. And if you can't do that, then you don't have it. So now, boys and girls, how many rights do you have? Come on. Come on, articulate some of them. Give me 5 or 10, would you? Just right off the top of your head, just tell me 5 or 10 of your rights, would you? Now, most of you people listening to me right now couldn't articulate 10 rights. You've got 10 rights articulated in the Bill of Rights. None of them are available to you. Let's take one, your right to remain silent. If you can't remain silent, then the right isn't available to you. So, when you're arrested and the policeman says, what's your name? And you say, my name is Joe Finkelstein. You've just waived your right to remain silent. by answering the question. And the policeman can sit there and ask you questions, and as long as you'll answer them, he can use every word that you say against you. And somebody says, well, they have to give me my Miranda rights. The Miranda right isn't a right, it's a warning. Dummy. It's not a right, it's a warning. The Fifth Amendment is your right to remain silent. The policeman's duty is to remind you that you have this right to remain silent. So he says, let me tell you that under the Miranda doctrine, you have the right to remain silent, you have the right to an attorney. Do you understand your right? Yes, sir. He's asking you, do you understand your Fifth Amendment rights? Yes, sir. Do you understand you can have an attorney? Yes, sir. Do you understand you can remain silent? Yes, sir. Now, okay, let's get down to business. What's your name? My name is Joe Finkelstein. And what's your Social Security number, Joe? And you tell him. And are you married? Yes. How many children do you have? And you tell him. And he asks you about 50 or 75 questions, and you sit there and answer all these questions, you fool. If you can't articulate, if you can't exercise the right, what value is it to you? Now, your founding fathers were fully familiar with this thing of contract. In fact, they even wrote it into your Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. Gave you the right to contract and then took it away from you under the Commerce Clause. When Congress meets, they're enacting laws, and all of the laws that they enact are predicated upon commerce, and all commercial laws are done by contract. So when you've got a seatbelt law, you know the law says, buckle up, it's the law. Okay, I don't deny that. Buckle up, it's the law, it's a contract, and you owe specific performance under the terms and conditions of that contract, that law. Because you have a driver's license and you agreed under the terms and conditions of the licensing agreement that you would buckle your seatbelt. That's called regulation. So all of the regulations that Congress and the state legislature is enacting, all of this, people will write me letters and they say, well, I live in the People's Republic of Michigan. And it's kind of a derogatory term. You see, the truth of the matter is the Constitution of Michigan and the Constitution of the United States have not been overturned, have not been repealed, have not been altered, reformed, amended, or changed in any way by regulations. Not at all. In fact, the way that we get to your rights is to get you to contract your rights away. So by getting you to sign a driver's license, we get you to constitutionally waive your Bill of Rights and bring yourself voluntarily under the regulatory system. That's the way we infringe upon your rights. Nobody is coming along here, boys and girls, sticking a gun at your head and telling you to dig a ditch 3 feet deep, 3 feet wide, and 100 feet long. And yet, every year, you pay your income tax, which is the equivalent of the amount of money that it would take to hire a man to dig a ditch 3 feet deep, 3 feet wide, and 100 feet long. How do we get you to do that? We get you to do that by contract. We don't come up to you and stick a gun at your head and say, we're going to compel you under threat of death to do this, that, or another thing. No, we just come to you and we say, would you like this? You know, your local public officials, would you like to have a new school? Well, yeah, I'd like to have a new school. Would you like to have sidewalks and streets and gutters and pavement? Well, yeah, I'd like to have that. Good. Vote for that in the upcoming election. So you go in and you vote for it in the upcoming election, and so now you pay for it with your property tax. That's a contract. They got your voluntary consent. We don't have to come up to you and stick a gun at your head. If you don't pay the tax, we'll just come take your house away from you. And if you get uppity, we'll send the sheriff out. And if you get uppity with him, he'll kill you. Drag your dead body away, and then we'll take your house. Because you agreed to it. We made you an offer. You agreed. Over time, with consideration. And the consideration was the new school. Or it was the paved sidewalks, or it was the paved street, or it was the light system, it was the LID, the Limited Improvement District, or whatever it was. So, boys and girls, nobody is taking your rights away and you don't live in the People's Republic of Michigan. Now, you may have created the People's Republic of Michigan by your contract, by your voluntary consent, but nobody imposed it upon you. You did it yourself. And you had to learn how to write. And that's why we send you to public school, to teach you how to sign your rights away by contract. All right, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, our schedule, and our archives. That can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about contracts. Now, I said at the beginning of tonight's program that we take a look at a type of contract called draft registration. If you were to ask the average lawyer, is my draft registration a contract? I think he would say, no, it isn't. But draft registration is, in fact, a contract. It's a contract because it's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Now, the reason that I tell you this is because draft registration isn't such a big hot ticket item today, but when we have a draft, it is. Because there's a lot of people that don't want to be drafted into the military. Now, my dad was drafted into the Army in 1943. I'm fully familiar with the draft. It comes from Title 8 of the U.S. Code, and the subject matter is soldiers, and the thing that makes you a soldier is when you take a step forward, raise your right hand, and swear your oath of allegiance. Oath of allegiance. So there's something that makes you a soldier. A soldier is a soldier because he's a soldier and you're not. How did he become a soldier? He had to do something to become a soldier. And if you go out and you just buy a uniform and start parading around wearing a military uniform and foisting yourself off as a soldier, I think you're going to get into trouble. That would be my guess. Because I don't think that I can go out and buy a soldier's uniform or, you know, a sailor's uniform and parade around and say, hey, I'm a soldier, I'm a sailor, without some kind of repercussion. By the same token, they've got some rules in the Army that you got to be wearing your uniform, and if they catch you out of uniform, you know, you got to be wearing your stripes and badges, and then you hold your insignia and dog tags, and if they catch you and you're not doing that, then you're subject to some kind of a penalty, a penal clause. Now, all contracts have penal clauses, and if you don't have a penal clause in the contract, then you've got a suggestion rather than a contract. So, you say you buy a house, and you got this contract, and the contract says you're going to pay $500 a month payments, and then you don't make those $500 a month payments. Or, the mortgage, or he says you're going to have insurance, and then you don't buy insurance on the house. And so he comes along and he imposes late fees, or he imposes sanctions upon you, penalties. You've got taxes to pay on this property based upon this mortgage. You know, you're responsible for paying these taxes. And so on. These are terms and conditions in the contract, and you're probably pretty familiar with that. Well, then how does draft registration meet up as a contract? Well, let me tell you a little story here. One time a guy came into class, and he was telling me a little story about the draft, how he had been drafted into the Army. He was from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I won't mention his name here because I don't know if he'd appreciate that or not, but this fellow, we'll call him Joe. Old Joe here, he didn't want to go into the Army. And he was draft age, and one day he got a letter in the mail, and the letter said, "Greetings, you have been inducted into the United States Army. And you are commanded to appear at the Army Induction Center at 2204 Jones Road, Atlanta, Georgia, on June 13th, 1969 or 70 or whatever it was." And this fellow, when he got that draft notice, now he had registered for the draft because that's the law. You have to register for the draft. It's the law. You have to register for the draft. It's the law. Have you heard that? Okay. Now, it is true you have to register, but if you knew what your rights were, remember those 1,100 rights, you don't have to answer any of the questions on the registration form. You got a Fourth and Fifth Amendment right. You got a First Amendment right. If you knew how to claim your rights, you could fill out the draft registration form by not answering the questions. But then, of course, you'd have to know how not to answer the questions to exercise those rights, wouldn't you? And we didn't teach you that in public school, because you're not supposed to know that. So this guy, Joe, he followed the instructions, and he went down to the Army Induction Center, got on a Greyhound bus and went down to Atlanta, Georgia, to the Army Induction Center, and he went into a big room, he said. And he'd thought about this, this is during the Vietnam War, and he'd thought about this war thing, and he came to a conclusion. He was a coward. He was just a chicken. And he didn't deny it. And he said, I came to the conclusion that people that go to Vietnam run the risk of getting killed. And I just didn't want to do that. And I weighed the alternatives. And the alternative, they advertised this alternative, if you don't register for the draft, we're going to prosecute you and put you in jail. Well, he didn't want to get prosecuted and didn't want to get put in jail, so he went down and registered for the draft. Evidently, he didn't know how to register for the draft without answering the questions, and so he went down, answered the questions, and registered for the draft. He waived his rights, is what he did. Well, he didn't waive all 1,100, but he waived several very important rights. Fourth, Fifth, First. And so now, you know, he'd signed up, and so he had to go down. So he did. He went down to the Army Induction Center, and they took him into a room, and he said there were 24 young men in there in civilian clothes. He was the 24th guy. 24 guys are in the room. And he said there were five other guys in there that were Army guys, or at least he assumed they were Army guys, because they were all wearing uniforms, and they had gold braid all over them, and they had badges and ribbons and chevrons and all kinds of thingies on them. And so somebody said, all right, line up in two ranks, 12 each. And so this guy, Joe, he strategically stationed himself in the second row on the left end. So just picture this, two ranks, two groups of men lined up. 24 men are lined up, 12 in the first row, 12 in the second row. And this guy, Joe, is in the second row on the left end, strategically placed himself on the end. Now, the guy says, take one step forward. And the 23 guys took one step forward and raise your right hand. Now, this guy took one step backward and one step to the left, did not raise his hand, and interrupted the proceedings by asking this question. And he said, if I do this, will I be waiving any of my civil or constitutional rights? Now, did you get this picture here? I mean, for all of you guys that have been through this, did you ever see anybody do such a thing? I mean, that's like standing up in the courtroom and the girl says, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, Mr. Gordon? And no, I do not. Okay, well, now here's a guy. He's kind of an oddball. He takes a step back, a step to the left, and he says, am I going to waive any of my civil or constitutional rights? Some other guy, he told me, some other guy. Not the guy who said, take a step forward and raise your right hand. Another one of the five guys took him by the arm and escorted him out of the big room into a little room. And he sat there with him. Just the two of them in this room. And he said about a half hour later or something like that, he didn't know exactly how long it was, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, the other four guys came into the room. Now the same five Army guys that were out there with the other 23 now come into the little room. And he said that was about 1:30 in the afternoon, and he said they worked on him. They threatened him. They threatened him with prison. But he'd already made up his mind that he'd rather spend 4 years in Leavenworth than 2 years in Vietnam, or 2 years in the Army and 1 year in Vietnam. So he'd already made up his mind. He said, I'm prepared to go to prison. I know they're going to put me in prison. I know they're going to arrest me right here, and they're going to prosecute me, and they're going to send me off to Leavenworth. He'd already made up his mind to that. And they threatened him with it. But they did something else. They not only threatened him with bad things, they promised him good things. They said, now why don't you be reasonable and just sign the enlistment contract? Did you get that? They said, just sign the enlistment contract. Well, wait a minute. Why would you sign an enlistment contract if you're being drafted? Signing the enlistment contract is something you do voluntarily. Now, for you guys that were drafted into the military, let me refresh your recollection here. What you did was, you got your letter that said you've been inducted into the United States Army. Go down here to this Army Induction Center. With me, it was Oakland, California. That was our Army Induction Center, Oakland, California, and that's where you had to appear. Then they took you into a room. They said, take a step forward, raise your right hand, and you swore an oath. Then they took you out of that room into another room where you signed some papers. More than one paper. You signed several papers. Some of those papers had to do with your vaccination. Some of them had to do with your enlistment. Enlistment. You see, all soldiers in the Army have a signature on the bottom line of an enlistment. When you join the Army voluntarily, you go into the enlistment center. You go into the Army recruiter and you sign the contract. Then you go into basic training where you take your step forward and take your oath. Because to become a soldier, you have to have a contract signed by you. and the Oath of Allegiance. Both, by the way, are strictly prohibited by your Creator in the Bible. In the Scripture, you know, depends on what you call it. That's right. It's against the law for you to sign a contract with a foreign and alien god, such as the United States of America, or Canada, or Australia, or Germany, or. It's against the law for you to practice idolatry, that is, you shall have no other gods before me, and it's against the law for you to sign this contract, which is strictly prohibited in four statutes in the Bible. Did you know that? Did you know there are four places in the Bible, four statutes, that prohibit you from doing that? Let's see if I can find them here just real quick for you. 33 benefits. Okay, here's Big Mike, chapter 34. And then we look here. It's in Exodus 23, 20 through 24. That's one place. Judges 2, verses 1 through 23. That's two. And then, let's see, now I've got to have my, just bear with me here as I turn the pages here. We've got four covenant statutes. Exodus 34, 10 through 17. And I believe the other one is in Deuteronomy. Let me just look through here for a second. Bear with me here. I believe that's the four. Four statutes over here prohibit you from signing contracts with the civil law state. And I believe that's the four places over there. Exodus 23, 20, Exodus 23, 32 and 33. Exodus 34, 10 through 17, and Deuteronomy 7, about 1 through 6. Now, I might be off there a statute or two, but here's the point that I'm making. In order for you to be a soldier in the army, in order for you to become a soldier, you have to violate four statutes of the Scripture. Oh, by the way, there's two statutes that prohibit you from taking an oath. That's in Matthew 5, 33 through 37, and James 5, 12. All right, now with that out of the way, going back here to my illustration, they worked on this guy for 3.5 hours. He said the magic hour for a bureaucrat is 4:45. At 4:45, after they had threatened him, after they had promised him, after they had done everything they could to get this, they played the Mutt and Jeff routine on him. They reminded him of Leavenworth. They left the room and they left a guy in there. Then they came back into the room and they threatened him some more. I mean, they worked on him long and hard. They've done this more than once because he said it was very orchestrated. Very well rehearsed, very well executed. He said he was thoroughly intimidated. I mean, the kid's, 19 years old. I mean, he said he was totally intimidated by these five soldiers in the army. Just scared the pea wadding right out of him. But he'd already made up his mind that he preferred Leavenworth to death or to military service. And so when he left, they gave him a one-way bus ticket back to Chattanooga. They gave him, this is the United States of America, Army, taxpayer money, gave him a bus ticket back to Chattanooga with a promise that he would be prosecuted. Now, 14 years later, he came to school here. This is 14 years after this event transpired. He came to school here, and up to that moment in time, he had not been prosecuted yet. And I said to him, well, that's because there's no such thing as compulsory military service. You cannot be drafted into the military against your will and over your objection. It's done by contract, and it's always done voluntarily. Boys and girls, all contracts are voluntary, and that's why they require your signature. It requires your consent. Now, I know you're going to jump up and down and say, wait a minute, Gordon, you said there are things called adhesion contracts that don't require your consent, and they're binding upon you anyway, like the Constitution of the United States and the Ten Commandments. Well, that's partially true, not quite 100% true. And that's because it also requires your participation. Your failure to object timely is fatal, and it's called the doctrine of laches, and you ought to write that down. It's called L-A-C-H-E-S, laches. It's the failure to assert a right timely. So, if you want to practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in place of the 10 commandments, even though you have a duty to practice the 10 commandments and you have a duty to avoid practicing the 10 planks, you can make your own choice. God himself gives you that choice in Deuteronomy chapter 30. In fact, he tells you very plainly. He says, now choose you this day who you're going to serve. You know, make up your mind. You know, either do it or get off the pot. Now, you make your choice by your action. And this is what Joe did. See, Joe, by his action, he took one step to the left, one step back, and objected timely to being drafted into the military in violation of the 13th Amendment, which prohibits involuntary servitude. Now, this has been argued a couple of times to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has always ruled that the military draft is not unconstitutional. And it isn't. It's voluntary. Now, let me run through this drill for you again. See, most people do not know about their 1,100 rights. And as a matter of fact, I challenged you a few minutes ago, and I said, articulate 10 of your rights. Those would be your 10 rights in the Bill of Rights. Just articulate those 10. There isn't one of you people listening to my voice right now, not one in 1,000 of you, who could articulate your Bill of Rights, much less the other 1,090 rights. You don't know what they are. And they're not available to you unless you can articulate them and demand them on the courtroom floor. All right, now that being the case, that's the state of the law. Were you instructed, by the way, were any of you instructed about this in the 7th, 8th, 9th grade? Don't you think that the public school to educate you and claim, you know, so that you can claim to be educated, don't you think that the public school ought to explain to you something about these contracts and about the draft and how the draft works and why it works that way? I mean, you know, I'm just Joe Sixpack. I just showed you how the draft worked. There's no such thing as compulsory military service under the Constitution of the United States. There never has been. There isn't now. I cannot tell you that there will not be in the future. Have people been prosecuted under the draft registration law? You betcha. You betcha. Have they been jailed? You betcha. Joe wasn't. Joe exercised his rights correctly. Many other people have violated the law, not exercising their rights, but violated the law. Those people go to jail. You see, there's a very clear distinction between violating the law and exercising your right. Many people believe they're exercising their rights when in fact they're violating the law. Well, you can't do that. You can't do that. If you're going to exercise a right, you have to know what the right is, you have to articulate it, and you can't violate the law in the process. Joe here never violated the law. He signed his draft registration. He had to appear. He appeared. He just refused to take the oath, and he refused to volunteer for military service. You don't have to volunteer. You can object. And failure to object timely is fatal. You want to write that down right under laches. Failure to object timely is fatal. It's called a maxim of law. And you need to know and understand the difference between the law and rights. They're not the same. Not the same. And when you go into court and the judge says, how do you plead? That's a contract. That's an offer. How would you like to plead today? Oh, I'd like to plead not guilty, judge. Okay, we'll set this for trial. Do you want a jury trial or a bench trial? Oh, I want a jury trial, Judge. Oh, wonderful. We'll set this for jury trial with not guilty. That's a contract. And what you have agreed to, you have agreed that a crime has been committed, but you deny that you committed the crime. And you agree that you want the jury to decide the facts, not the law. Now, in this case that I've just orchestrated to you, this is not a jury issue. This is a legal issue to be decided by a bench trial. You know, this draft registration thing over here, this is a legal issue to be decided. Juries don't decide rights. Juries don't decide law. Juries decide facts. It shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it is. You know, we practice the Roman civil law. We don't practice the Ten Commandments. We don't practice the justice system. We practice the adversarial system under the Roman civil law. We shouldn't be doing that, but then we decided that's what we wanted to do. Well, if that's what you want to do, don't you think you ought to know what the law is and what your rights, privileges, and immunities are so that you could exercise those? I know it's a wild new concept for most of you, but many of you people out there have degrees. You have letters after your name. You call yourself educated. Don't you think you ought to know what your 1,100 rights are? Don't you think you ought to know how many rights you have? And don't you think you ought to know how you could claim them if you were so inclined? Now, most people are not inclined to claim and exercise their rights. This fellow I'm telling you about decided to claim and exercise his rights under the 13th Amendment to be exempted from involuntary servitude. And he did, and he was successful at it. He did not break the law. He exercised his rights. The soldiers tried to get him to waive his rights. They tried every way they could to get him to sign, to voluntarily consent, but he wouldn't do it. They threatened him with prison, and he wouldn't bend. They didn't put him in prison because, indeed, you cannot be jailed for the exercise or the claim and exercise of a constitutional right. In fact, that's one of your rights. Did you know that? It comes from Miranda versus Arizona. And it says that where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no lawmaking, there can be no legislation which would abrogate those rights. You can't enact a draft to nullify your 13th Amendment right to be free from involuntary servitude. You can be cunningly coerced into waiving that right if you don't know what it is or how to claim it. Hey, we're about out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. And let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide daily over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Okay, we're about out of time. We'll be back here tomorrow night talking about contracts. But I've got to remind you that we're out of time and that we're going to have to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing. So good night, friends.